This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Service Dogs of Virginia. They're a small nonprofit that's improved the lives of countless Virginians. But many have never heard of them. We're hoping to do our part to correct that this hour. Then there's Francis, an SPCA rescue canine. His person is a psychiatrist. And Francis has now been trained to help with mental health therapy. Francis himself may not have much to say, although we are expecting him in the studio. His psychiatrist friend, though, has plenty to tell us. And the founder of the service dogs group we mentioned, here too. Also with us, a mother who's seen her quadriplegic son's life improve dramatically since a service dog entered their family. And if you've got thoughts about the power of doggies to help the world, you're certainly invited to join the conversation too, when our focus on dogs in service begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Dogs in service, our focus today. Notice I did not say dogs in the service. We're not looking, not today at least, at dogs in the military or even dogs active in law enforcement, but instead, dogs who are being used for what appears to be their unique ability to help human beings in need. And if you ever thought about that, you are welcome to join in by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK. A bit later in the show, we expect to meet up with a psychiatrist who about 2 years ago trained a rescue dog to act as a mental health assistant in her clinical therapeutic practice. But we start with an organization that began its work almost 15 years ago. And if you've not yet heard of them, I suspect that in a few minutes you'll be asking yourself, why didn't I know about that? The group is called Service Dogs of Virginia. Its founder and executive director, Peggy Law, is with us, as is one of her volunteers, Linda Morris. Ms. Law, Ms. Morris, thank you both so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Peggy, let's start with the basics. What is Service Dogs of Virginia? What does it do, and how do you come to be doing it?
Service Dogs of Virginia is a small nonprofit organization that raises and trains dogs for people with disabilities. And our goal is to have a canine assistant that can help make their lives more independent by being able to use this highly trained dog. The way that we that I came to start the organization is I had the unfortunate experience of being in a very bad accident that easily could have disabled me for life.
And you were thrown off a horse.
Actually, I was kicked in the head by the horse.
Ah.
So I was on the ground when it happened. But, you know, people have car accidents and bicycle accidents and slip on banana peels all the time. And I don't mean to sound macabre, but anybody's life can change in an instant. And people with disabilities are just like you and I. They've just had something that has either they've been born with or that they have encountered later in life and that has changed their life. And so having had this experience and having been an animal lover, I decided that I was going to see what I could do to make a difference.
Now, we should mention that after being kicked by the horse, although you were fairly seriously injured, eventually there was pretty much a full recovery for you?
Absolutely a full recovery. I had the entire left side of my face demolished, and I had reconstructive surgery and had my jaws wired and was put back together by a great team of doctors in Winchester, I may add. And except for a facial scar, I'm perfect.
And I understand, Peggy Law, that for many years before that, you had actually worked with zoo animals.
I had.
But this idea of creating an agency that would train and provide for free to people who needed them, service dogs, dogs to help people in wheelchairs, and then you eventually expanded that to help children with autism and even more recently, people with diabetes, and we can talk about all of those specifics in a moment. That whole idea came to you sometime in the late 1990s?
Well, I had read about service dogs. I'm certainly not the person who came up with the idea and originated them by any means.
But the idea to create this kind of agency that would serve the whole state of Virginia.
Yes.
Came up after you were, or while you were recuperating from this accident?
Well, I was going through some personal changes. I went through a divorce and had been in business with my ex-husband and needed to make career changes. And so the combination of my life circumstances gave me an opportunity to start something new. And I took advantage of that.
Linda Morris.
Hello.
Volunteer with Service Dogs of Virginia. Hello. Do I understand correctly, Linda, that a service dog entered your family's life sometime in late 2011?
Actually, it was late 2009.
Tell us about that.
My son was injured in July of 2008. He dove into a river and hit a rock, and that left him a quadriplegic. And when we were at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia, they had therapy dogs come in, and they also had an organization that brought service dogs in. And we knew then that we would like to have a service dog. And we thought we would be going back to Atlanta for a service dog, and my sister-in-law let me know about this organization, Service Dogs of Virginia, and
your sister-in-law's a nurse?
Yes, she is. And I contacted Peggy, and we started the process.
And how old was your son when he had this accident that left him so paralyzed?
He was 20.
And how old is he now?
25.
So you've had a service dog in your home for close to 4 years?
Yes.
What kind of difference has it made?
A tremendous difference. I knew that having a service dog, he would do all of the mechanical things, the things that they're taught to do, like open doors for my son Luke, help him take a sweatshirt off, take his socks off, pick things up for him. I never realized what an impact emotionally that Polar would have with Luke. And it's just a relationship that is very heartwarming to me.
Can you tell us more about that? What is it that you see? I mean, I don't want you to feel pressed to talk about anything, Linda, that's uncomfortable. But I would imagine anyone listening is thinking the same thing I am, that to have a son at age 20 have his life so radically changed in an instant, sort of harking back to what Peggy Law was saying just a few moments ago, and to now be confined to a wheelchair, unable to get most of his body to work, that there had to be huge emotional challenges. And what you're saying to us is that once, I think the dog's name is Polar?
Yes.
The service dog who was trained by this agency, Service Dogs of Virginia, came into your home, came into your life, came into your son's life, things changed in dramatically good ways. So what I'm wondering is if you feel comfortable telling us a little bit more about those ways, about what you saw, about what changed.
Well, not only, excuse me, emotionally, but physically. All of the muscles in Luke's shoulders don't work. So therefore, he had to do a lot of therapy to get the muscles working that he had. And having Polar, I think, helped with that. Some of his finer motor skills, it helped with that. He has no use of his fingers, but he had to learn to pick up these tiny pieces of dog food to give Polar as treats. And he had a hard time at first and then just got better and better. I mean, and now, I mean, it's no problem at all. But Polar, of course, at this point doesn't work for food. He works because he loves Luke. They're an amazing pair. You know, Luke has been an amazing spirit through all of this. He still hunts and he fishes. He has adaptive equipment to help him do that. Polar goes fishing with him, not hunting, because Polar's afraid of guns. It has helped me if I have to leave Luke alone, because I know that if he drops his phone or anything that he drops, Polar's right there. He picks it up, puts it on Luke's lap. Has saved my back a lot.
Polar is has a real joy about him. He's kind of a zany dog. We weren't sure who was going to be the right person for Polar, because Polar is really full of beans and always has been. And when he and Luke met, they had a real great connection. I remember when we were interviewing and Luke met several dogs, and I said to Linda, you know, I want you to meet this dog, but he is he's really out there. I mean, he's got a lot of energy, and he gets into trouble. And Luke lit up like, oh boy, I can't wait to meet this dog. And Linda was thinking, oh no. And they just they had something special right from the get go. And I would say that something that ties very much into what our good doctor here is doing, the dogs are very, very motivating. So when Linda talks about how Luke learned to use certain muscles that he hadn't been using before, it's because he truly wanted to, and he pushed himself to limits that he didn't know he had, and he found creative ways, and there was just a tremendous amount of engagement that dog brought out.
Well, as long as you mentioned the good doctor, let me say that joining us now is a clinical therapist who does most of her work these days with college students, but for about 2 years now, she has had a four-legged assistant to help. This next guest serves as staff psychiatrist for the Counseling Center at James Madison University. Dr. Colleen Tennyson, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Well, Colleen, your assistant's name is Francis.
Correct.
And he's sitting right next to you. What can you tell us about him?
Well, Francis was actually rescued. I adopted him from the Harrisonburg SPCA in the summer of 2009. So he's been my personal pet and companion for a while. And my intention actually in rescuing Francis was to eventually introduce him to my clinical practice and my work. So we immediately started training, just doing some pretty basic obedience, then moved into more advanced obedience. And he entered into the counseling center in the spring of 2011. And so he's been with us since that time, working in the capacity of animal therapist at the counseling center.
What does an animal therapist do?
Sure. A therapy animal is certainly different than a service animal. what we're doing in therapy is doing some pretty intentional, goal-directed activities with Francis to kind of improve the therapeutic relationship with our clients. So if you could picture it in the counseling room is a mental health practitioner, Francis, and then a client. And so the three of them are kind of working together to facilitate just mental wellness and growth on the part of the client.
Okay, you heard the music sneaking in there in our headphones. You're going to use that as a way to take a pause, and we'll take a pause, but I'm going to want to hear much more about the specifics of how Francis works the magic that he's reputed to be working over at the Counseling Center at James Madison University. And Linda Morris and Peggy Law from Service Dogs of Virginia, we certainly want to hear more about the specifics of your work and the canines that you are working with. And you listening are invited to join in too. The phone number is coming up.
When we're riding in the car, I sit in the back. I stick my face out the window, you can hear my tongue flap. Now all this time I thought I was folks like you, but I guess I'm a dog and I guess that'll do. If it's a dog's life, then I'm living large. Every night I get a treat from a big old lady named Marge. Even a dog needs love, don't forget about that.
Daddy a Go-Go from back in 2009, singing what most of us who are dog lovers probably think about what's going on in the minds of our four-legged friends, that they think they are people too. That song called I Think I Might Be a Dog. Colleen Tennyson is staff psychiatrist at James Madison University's Counseling Center. Dr. Tennyson's partner in her clinical work is a rescue dog named Francis. Also with us, the founder and executive director of Service Dogs of Virginia, Peggy Law, as well as volunteer puppy raiser for that agency. And that means just what you might think puppy raiser would mean, somebody who raises puppies and does early training for dogs that are going to become service dogs. That puppy raiser person in our studio's name is Linda Morris. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. If you have any thoughts about the special ability of dogs to help people in need, we'd be happy to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or maybe you have a question for our guests. I certainly have lots of questions, Peggy Law. What kinds of dogs make the best service dogs? Why are certain dogs better than other dogs? How is it that you train them? How much does it cost to train them? How in the world, if you're giving these dogs away to people in need, can you afford to be doing what you're doing? You want to answer any of those questions? Or you have another topic you want to pick?
That's a great topic. You may have to remind me what they are again. First of all, we mostly use Labrador Retrievers, and it's not that the Labrador Retriever is the only dog that could be a service dog, not by any stretch of the imagination, but we use them for a variety of reasons in our program. The first one is that they are a short-coated breed, and if we have clients who cannot use their hands to brush out knots and tangles, that's an important criteria. Secondly, Labradors are very, very food motivated, and we train with positive reinforcement and we use treats as rewards. And Labradors are never full and they're always eager to earn their next little bit.
Anybody who's ever had a lab in their life is nodding their heads.
That's
going,
right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay.
So that makes training that much easier. Another reason that we use them is that they're going to go to at least 3 homes in 2 years. They're going to start with a puppy raiser. They may live with me or one of our other advanced trainers in their advanced training period, and then they're going to be placed with their permanent person. They may even have a couple of additional homes in that whole mix. The Labradors are very capable and make those transitions very easily, partly because of their being ruled by their stomach so much. If you feed them, they're pretty happy to go with you. But they tend to like a lot of people, and they're not, I wouldn't say that they're not loyal, but they are very welcoming of all their relationships. So it makes it easy for them to make those transitions. And so those are the main reasons that we use Labradors. Now remind me of what some of your other questions were.
Well, I'm seeing Linda watch you very carefully, and since she helps in the raising of these dogs, official category, I guess, is called puppy raiser, Linda?
Yes.
You have anything to add about how the dogs get trained?
Yes. We normally get them at 8 weeks, and then we start the process. There are several cues that they learn within the first few months. Having a puppy is always fun.
So there are cues that they learn. Tell me more about that.
that means that a certain hand signal or a certain word or something they're supposed to respond to in a certain way?
Well, we take our approach to teaching the puppies kind of like putting them through kindergarten and then through elementary and junior high. So we want to build their skills first with their ABCs. So we start with some very simple tasks that we then use to build more complex ones. So we really lay a foundation for them when they're really little. And some of the early cues that they learn, one great example is one called touch, where they will put their nose on the back of your hand on cue. And touch can then be developed into pushing a door shut. So they learn to use their nose strategically. We also can teach a fun command called kiss, where they're going to give you a little bonk with their nose on your nose. We teach what we call an extended behavior, where we ask them to put their nose on the back of our hand and hold it there. So they learn to do a duration behavior, which comes in handy later when we're teaching them to hold a door open. They already understand the concept of doing something for an extended period of time. So touch can be used in a lot of different ways. We are doing work with training diabetic alert dogs, and the nose bonk also then becomes the cue that we use to tell the person that their blood sugar has dropped. So you can see how something started at 8 weeks can then be transformed into something very useful by the time they're two.
And we should clarify that service dogs are completely different than guide dogs.
Yes. So a guide dog helps someone with a visual impairment. Service dogs work in all the other ways that dogs can help people with a disability.
Well, he doesn't often give me treats for it, but our executive producer, Matt Bingay, occasionally gives me cues that we have people waiting on the phone line, and I'm getting one of those cues now. So let's go to Candace in Harrisonburg. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight, Candace, and let me remind anybody who's listening, or if you've just tuned in, that our guests are Peggy Law, Executive Director of Service Dogs of Virginia, Linda Morris, a volunteer at that nonprofit agency, as well as Dr. Colleen Tennyson, staff psychiatrist at the James Madison University Counseling Center. We're talking about dogs in service. And Candace, I understand you have something you'd like to add.
Yes. Hi, how are you today? My husband and I have just moved from Phoenix, Arizona about a year ago, and we have been involved very much with our dogs as therapy dogs. And so we, when we were in Phoenix, we visited our one of our hospitals there, and we have Schultes. We have five, and so we rotated, you know, one every week. We'd go in and visit, and we would be visiting almost in every area of the hospital just to cheer the patients up and just give everybody a little change of scenery. And it was a really great thing. And now that we're here, the hospital here has begun the program, and we are involved in that and just real excited about it.
Dr. Tennyson, your assistant, Francis, who's lying very peacefully next to you, has a vest on that says therapy dog on it. But my guess is that the type of therapy he does is different than what Candace is talking about?
That's right, because primarily what I'm utilizing Francis in is therapy, kind of one-on-one therapy between a mental health practitioner and a client. And, you know, I think, Candace, what the work that you're doing just sounds wonderful. I think that can be so helpful for individuals who are in a hospital. I know oftentimes therapy dogs are often visiting schools, interacting with children as well, and that can be another great use of therapy animals.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about the situations that you go into. You primarily go into hospitals?
You know, well, therapy dogs can, like your other guest was mentioning, can go anywhere. We've gone into nursing homes. We've gone into schools where, you know, into reading programs for the children, and we take the dogs. And, you know, the dog sits beside us and they kind of think the dog is reading them the story. We've done hospitals most of the time, but, you know, it's endless.
So, Candace, what would you say is going on in those situations that you see as a common denominator? What are these different Sheltie creatures doing that ends up being a benefit for the people who are receiving the service?
Oh, okay. It cheers them up, basically. I mean, it calms them down. It gives them something else to think about than the reason that they're in the hospital. A lot of people maybe haven't seen their dog for a long time if they've been in, you know, as a patient for many days or weeks or months. And it cheers them up. They don't always have to talk a lot, but sometimes we would go in and they would just pet the dog. And we had instances where we were in ICU or ER, I've forgotten which one it was, once, and the nurse came rushing in, and she said, oh, I had to check on the patient. She said, the blood pressure just went right down, and I needed to check. And then she saw the dog, and she said, oh, that's why. We've had, because the patient was petting the dog, and their blood pressure literally just lowered almost in front of our eyes, we've had doctors tell us, oh, please stay, you're doing more good than we are. It just makes all the difference to the patients, I think. It makes us feel good, and the dog is really happy. I think the dogs think that we go there just for them to get petted.
No, we have a read program at our organization as well, and
is Peggy Long.
Yeah, the reading program is pretty special, I think. You made a comment that the kids think the dog is reading to them. The way our program is structured is that the purpose of the dog is to make the environment less stressful for the kids, so that the kids are actually reading to the dogs, who are non-judgmental and who might even close their eyes and look like they're sleeping. But we tell the kids that they have to close their eyes to picture the story much better. So it really can improve kids' test scores, because if you make the environment of reading more fun, then kids read more. And when kids read more, they learn to read better.
And this is Colleen. I was just going to comment on something that Peggy just mentioned, was that non-judgmental approach. I think that's one of the key factors that makes dogs so effective, is in that human-animal bond, is really that non-judgmental relationship. One of the things I think works really well for Francis is that he oftentimes enters a room with a client and, again, is not judging them and is just really seeking affection and attention from the patients that I'm working with. And very much is actually parallels the patient's experience, because they're sitting in the room. Therapy can be very scary. They're sitting in the room feeling very vulnerable, and they would like comfort and some relief from emotional pain. And so I think oftentimes in the hospital setting, in reading with children, in nursing homes, and then even in these one-on-one sessions that we have in the counseling center, it is that human-animal bond. It's that non-judgmental kind of temperament of a dog that's just seeking affection and attention from an individual that really just helps them feel much less stress, emotional pain, and feel a lot better.
And I think to echo that too, even with our service dogs who do have this other level of training, the heart connection is huge. And,
absolutely.
You know, people who are maybe holding an awful lot in emotionally, and have to keep it together in a lot of ways, that with a dog they can just make that connection and really feel something special between two beings.
Right. I'll often hear a client say that they trust Francis before they would ever trust me. So it doesn't matter how many years of graduate training you have. Francis certainly can win them over a lot faster than I can.
Candace, thank you so much for your call. It's good to talk to you. And we ought to find out more about what you're doing. Welcome to the area. We'll hope to talk again soon. I should mention, for anybody who's just tuned in, that our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight include Peggy Law, Executive Director of Service Dogs of Virginia, Linda Morris, a volunteer at that nonprofit agency, and Dr. Colleen Tennyson, staff psychiatrist at James Madison University Counseling Center, who uses her four-legged partner, Francis, in her clinical therapy work. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And just a moment ago, Francis came over while you guys were all talking to each other and wagged his tail against me. And I was thinking, you know, maybe my blood pressure was going to drop. But then he walked away and he's investigating. We haven't mentioned yet, in part because I actually didn't realize that Kaysen was coming with you, Peggy. But we have, in addition to Francis, we knew Francis was coming, we have a black Labrador retriever who loves treats sitting right next to you.
Yes, yeah, so she's enjoying a few as we're talking. Kaysen is being trained as a diabetic alert dog, and she will be placed within the next 2-3 months. She's
and that's
almost
a fairly
finished.
New phenomenon. But tell us
yeah,
how that works.
The diabetic alert work is relatively new, and there's a few of us who are plunged into this field. I think what's really interesting is that the dogs have been probably smelling this scent, and it is an odor, and that's what they alert on, for millennium. But we didn't know they were smelling it. So we don't teach them to smell it. We teach them that we care when they smell it and to tell us.
And what they're smelling is something that's associated when a human being's blood sugar level drops?
Yes, there is an odor associated with low blood sugar, and there's an alternate odor that is associated with high blood sugar. We mostly train to the lows because those are the ones that are life-threatening, while the high blood sugars have more of the long-term consequences like blindness or amputation. The lows are the actual life-threatening in the moment.
So you train the dog to respond when it picks up the odor that is there.
Yes.
And how does the dog respond when somebody who is a diabetic is having one of these episodes?
Well, one can teach whatever alert you choose. So we've tried a number of different alerts to try to figure out what is going to be the most useful. So we've worked with the dog tugging on a rope that's attached to somebody's belt. We've worked on having the dog tug a band attached to the wrist. And now what we're doing is having the dog poke somebody with their nose, kind of a, hey, your blood sugar's low, you better check it out. We train the dog to do the alert and then to be persistent if the person doesn't respond right away.
Now, Peggy Law, when you started this effort in the year 2000, you were focused on training and providing service dogs specifically for people who were in wheelchairs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And later you expanded to helping people, I guess, especially children with autism.
Yes.
And the diabetes service dog is new. I can see from the clock that we're going to hit the break soon, but we haven't talked much yet about the autism part that came kind of in the middle here. Putting up with the music that's going to start in your headphones in a second. Can you tell us at least a little bit about that?
Yes, I can. We use the dog in several ways to help a child with autism. First, there is that heart connection that we were speaking of earlier. Not every child with autism is going to respond to the dog that way. But for those who do, it's a wonderful connection. A lot of kids on the spectrum have trouble relating to other people. Even if they like people, they don't know how to have those interactions. So the dog can really help facilitate and teach some of that. We also use the dog for safety. And maybe we can talk some more about that in a few minutes.
That sounds like an excellent idea.
Okay.
We are talking about dogs in service with two people from the agency Service Dogs of Virginia and a third person who's a psychiatrist and uses a dog in her therapeutic work. We'd love to talk to you too, and the phone number is coming up.
I know why I'm feeling like a big dog.
From the movie Shaggy Dog in 2006. If you're a dog lugger, you probably remember that. But whatever your previous experience with dogs, you're welcome to join this conversation about what it is that makes dogs of benefit in service. Do you have a theory about the connection between human beings and dogs so that when there's someone who has a special need, it sometimes seems like a canine is perfect to help meet that need? Got a question about how all this works, about how it might work for somebody you know? Got an experience that you'd be willing to share? We've got a phone line open at 888-WMRA-TALK. You can also reach us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Now, Linda Morris is a mother of a young man who first began using a service dog late 2009, and only a few weeks later, after seeing how much this new member of their family was helping her son, Linda started doing volunteer work with Service Dogs of Virginia. Peggy Law founded that Service Dogs agency back in the year 2000. Today, she still serves as the group's executive director. And back in 2009, Dr. Colleen Tennyson began training a dog rescued from the SPCA to help with her work as a clinical psychiatrist. 2 years later, that fellow, Francis, is his name, by the way, Francis began to work as a mental health assistant in the counseling center at James Madison University. Autism. You want to tell us more?
Yes. What I'd like to do is describe the few tasks that we do train the dogs to do that are specifically for the autism piece, for the families with children with autism.
So, Peggy Law, how long ago did you begin working with training dogs to assist children with autism? Do you have any idea?
I think it's been maybe 6 or 7 years now.
And was there a specific reason that this came up?
Yes, the same reason that we do our diabetic work, and that's because people were calling and asking for it. And so many people called and said, can you help us in this way? We've heard about it. When they called, I thought, well, I don't know if I can help with that. I didn't have any experience in it, so I began to do some research. And there was a program in Canada that was doing some pioneering work with the autism assist dogs. And so I went up there and spent a week working with them and learning what they do and why they do it. And since then, a lot of other programs have taken on this work because it is helpful and it is valuable to the children.
And I'm sorry, I interrupted. You were talking a little bit about how the process of training.
I'm sorry.
The autism dogs?
Yes. Not so much the process of training, but what we actually train the dogs to do. So a lot of kids on the spectrum are what you would describe as elopers or runners. So they're either running away from something that they might be afraid of or running towards something they might be interested in, like some flowers that are blooming across a crowded highway. They are quick to dart away, and it's really dangerous for parents. So it's very.
Is there a specific age group of children that we're talking about?
Yeah, we're looking at kids maybe between 5 and 12 years of age.
Okay.
Maybe more like 5 and 10 years of age when it's most appropriate for the dog to do this job. So what we do is the dog and the child are actually tethered together. So the child wears a little vest, and the dog is also wearing a vest, and then there is a line that links them together. The parent is in charge, and the parent is always in charge and holding the leash. So if the child starts to bolt and run off, the parent can quickly cue the dog to down and stay, and the child then is anchored in place. So it allows the parent to not have to have a death grip on their child and to be able to get toddler number two out of the car or carry a bag of groceries or whatever else they might need. Once the child is in that downstay, or I'm sorry, once the dog is in the downstay with the child, we hope that the child learns to sit with the dog, to pet him, to stroke his ears, to enjoy those moments when they normally would be running. Now they've got a buddy that they can be with. So that's one task, is the safety piece, which is huge for a lot of kids. Another thing that we teach is a lot of kids on the spectrum do something that's referred to as stimming, where they will do a repetitive behavior over and over and over again. Sometimes those behaviors are self-destructive. In either case, they're not socially functional, and the parents usually don't want them to keep doing it. It's really detrimental to the parent-child relationship if the parent is constantly telling them, no, stop. So we teach the dog to go over and either do a nose bump or put their foot, the dog's paw on the child's foot to, again, say, hey, pay attention to me, stop what you're doing, watch me. And it's a very gentle intervention, again, that is received a little more kindly than the parent telling the child to stop. Third thing that we do, kids on the spectrum, a lot of them, when they're under stress, like physical pressure on their body. So we teach the dog to either lay on top of the child or close up next to them to provide some of that physical pressure. So those are some of the tasks that we train. Then the dog can also be used socially for kids who maybe are higher functioning. They can learn to say, this is my dog. Her name is Kaysen. She's a black Labrador. She weighs 50 pounds, etc. And if they learn a whole spiel that they can say, pretty soon they can answer more spontaneous questions. So it opens a door for more appropriate social interaction.
Wow. We're going next to Stanton. Rick, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for Peggy Law, Linda Morris, and or Dr. Colleen Tennyson.
Well, I just wanted to call and say thank you for Service Dogs of Virginia, because my my older son actually has a service dog from you all.
Who is this?
Hello?
Hello, who is this?
Rick, can you hear us?
I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Just barely.
Well, I'm so sorry for that, because it looked like we were about to engage in a wonderful conversation between you and Peggy Law. If we're having technical problems, we'll just have to stop the call here.
Hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yes, of course we can hear you.
Okay, great. No, my son has a service dog.
We got that much.
Is your son Eric?
Sorry, what did you say, Peggy?
Is your son Eric?
See, the problem that we're having here, Rick, for some reason, is that one microphone connects with you okay, and another microphone doesn't. So since we have other callers waiting, I'm just going to have to cut you at this point. And again, thank you for taking the time to express what you did. And please accept my heartfelt apologies for the technical problem. I'm sure we'll have people looking at it as soon as this broadcast ends. But thanks so much, Rick in Stanton, for calling us. I think we have another call coming in from Stanton. We'll see if we can work this one better. Ro, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. Hi. Is this connection good?
So far.
Okay. Well, I am from Tucson, Arizona. I've been here 4 years, but I have three service dogs who worked the homes. I owned two facilities in Tucson, Arizona, and my dogs worked the homes with me. In training them, I had a woman who was a service dog trainer come in, work with me, work with the dogs, and then take it from there. And they were young. One was... a couple of them were fairly young puppies, you know, not too young, because they're three Labradors. Two of them were more puppy-ish, and the other one was about 3 years old. I still have the dogs. They were remarkable in their sense, their hearing, their smelling. What we did was use the touch method in a way that we would put peanut butter and that spray cheese, you know, on, you know, our hands first, and then put it on a drawer or a doorknob, refrigerator, light switches. The dogs would then help people pick up things that they had dropped. In many instances, my big male was able to help people get up, but with another person helping. But they would all come directly to me or to whoever was on duty there to let the caregiver or myself know that somebody, they patrolled the hallways to let me know, and particularly the caregiver who was an overnight person, know if somebody was rustling, because many falls happen at night, and, you know, that's alarms, you know.
Well, hold on just a second for us. Yep. I think I can tell by the look on Dr. Colleen Tennyson's face that she might have a question for you.
Good, good. Great.
Well, actually, just more of a comment. You know, I'm sitting here reflecting on working in higher education, and I think one of the things, just to mention, it's different than my practice, but what I think service dogs can offer is really a lot of independence for individuals.
Yes.
And I think so many students that are entering in higher education now are able to do so because they have a companion, because they have an animal, you know, a service dog who's allowed them more independence, now the ability to come onto a campus and to live in a different environment.
Absolutely.
Ro, thank you so very much for your call. Colleen, picking up on that, I was trying to be nice earlier in the show. It happens rarely, but it happens every once in a while. And we were talking about Linda Morris's experience with her son at the age of 20, being in this diving accident, ending up being paralyzed for most of his body, being a quadriplegic now. And then when a service dog came into their home, Linda told us not only did the dog do the things, the physical things that she sort of expected it could do to help her son, but there was this emotional bond that created tremendous benefits. And the way I was trying to be nice was to not press Linda when it looked like she didn't want to talk more about some of that emotional stuff, because I didn't want to try and make her cry. I'm not going to try and make you cry, but you're a psychiatrist. I would think maybe you could speak a little bit more to just what this bond is and what those emotional benefits are.
Sure. Well, you know, I think we spoke about it a little bit, is really that non-judgmental piece. And animals in many ways are submissive to humans. And I think in a therapeutic relationship, oftentimes people can feel very vulnerable. Somebody who may be newly experiencing a disability or a traumatic event can experience a lot of emotional pain, a lot of vulnerability. And they can kind of relate to some of that in the animal. And so that helps them just in that healing process to kind of recognize that, to come to understand that, to incorporate that into their sense of self. And as they're processing that, oftentimes it's very helpful to do that with an animal who will just continue to show unconditional love and support in that environment.
Help me with the phrase you just used, incorporate that into their sense of self. What are they incorporating? The human being, are they incorporating into their sense of self, do you believe, as a result of this emotional bond with a four-legged friend?
Sure. You know, I think that they're just, you know, coming to understand how they're relating to another being. They're coming to understand themselves maybe as an individual with a disability, or coming to understand themselves as a person who's also struggling with anxiety or depression. And that can be a hard thing for someone to accept and to just to kind of come to terms with that. And I think the relationship, that bond between a human and animal, can certainly ease that path. You know, they're not kind of working on that alone. Now they have kind of a partner who can be there and continue to offer support through that.
Service dogs also, I think, help bridge the gap between, like, for instance, my son who's in a chair, if someone who's newly in a chair, they...
Wheelchair.
Yes, can be self-conscious going out into public. And when they have the service dog with them, it's like people don't even notice the chair. They notice the dog, talk to the person. It really bridges the gap.
Mm-hmm. You know, a dog kind of takes away some of the anxiety in the room, just between
Absolutely.
Any two people, you know, oh, there's an animal in the room. We all kind of experienced that as we met today.
Yes.
This is such a wonderful dimension of discussion. I'm sorry to interrupt it, but we're almost out of time. And I wanted to make sure to ask you, Peggy Law, about the fact that, do I understand correctly, on average, it costs about $40,000 per dog to be training these dogs for the 2 years that you train each of them.
Yes, it does. We've done analysis of our costs, and it's close to $20,000 each year.
So how do you get the money?
Well, part of what we do, part of our job is to fundraise, is to ask people who feel moved by what we do to contribute, because we do not charge our clients for the dogs. We may be instituting a little more client fundraising work, but what we don't want is for somebody's financial situation to be an obstacle to their independence.
So, and if someone wants to know more about your agency?
www.servicedogsva.org.
Or they can go to the Virginia Insight page and click on the link there that we've got to your organization. Our guests have been Peggy Law, Executive Director of the Charlottesville-based Service Dogs of Virginia, Linda Morris, a volunteer with that nonprofit agency, as well as mother to a young man who is a recipient of service dog assistance. Plus, from the Counseling Center at James Madison University, clinical psychiatrist Colleen Tennyson. Do I have time to mention also that we have in the studio Francis, who's with Colleen, and Kaysen, who's with Linda and Peggy. Thank you all so much for making time for us. Thank you for tuning in for this edition. The dogs are quiet, the people are quiet. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.